Hello and welcome to this module. We're going to cover power for heating and lighting, and specifically we're going to talk about scalable systems that are both affordable to put into place right now and high enough quality to use if your planning goes out to 6, 12, or 24 months. And we're also going to talk about solutions that you can start using, again, right now, so that you can get benefit from them before you're in a survival situation. What we want to try to avoid is buying things that 10, 20, 30 years from now, if no disaster has happened, we don't want to have stuff that's just sat around for the last 10, 20, 30 years. We want to get stuff that we can use both now and after a disaster. And I'm going to share a simple trick with you that'll let you turn your extra beans and rice into usable electricity to run all of your electronics. And I think you'll like this. So let's get right into it. We're a power-hungry society. We use power for everything, for cooking, for refrigeration, for heating and air conditioning, for communication, lighting and entertainment, security, and more. I mean, almost everything that we use involves energy in some way or another. And when the grid goes down, you've got two options. Number one is you use less because it's been forced upon you, or because your emergency energy supply is only so big, or you make more. And ideally, we'd be able to make enough to take care of everything that we do normally just living off of the grid, but it's not really that practical. Off-grid power costs a lot. I can't begin to convey how much money it costs to go completely off-grid, especially if you're in an urban area. If you're out in the country, then you've got a little more flexibility, and you can make things happen that you just can't do in the city. But even in the country, it's pretty darn expensive to go off-grid, especially purely off-grid with solar and wind. So your main options are going to be to generate power with a conventional generator, either gas, diesel, or other fuel. Use solar or wind power, or use human power. And solar is great, and I love it, really love it. My family's been using solar to one extent or another since the late 70s or early 80s. So big fan of solar. And it's great, but it's something that you can't put into place in the next couple of days. And it's also pretty darn expensive. And I'm going to give you a big warning on the quote-unquote cheap solar systems in just a minute. Human-powered generation is it's a different problem. It's not that expensive to buy, but it takes a lot of man hours per week to generate enough power to actually be usable to run what we would consider vital appliances. Now, gas generators, on the other hand, and basically what I mean by gas generators, one that uses gasoline, natural gas, propane, diesel, etc. Gas generators can be bought today or tomorrow and used immediately. It's what people go to the store and buy when a hurricane is a day out and they want to make sure that they've got power, because it's not rocket science. You just get it and you use it. Now, with generators, you've got a couple of big considerations. And on one end of the spectrum, you want a generator that's going to run everything that you use on a normal day-to-day basis. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got a generator that's going to be respectful of how much money you have to spend, respectful of how strong you are and how able you are to move it, and fuel considerations. A whole house generator takes basically an 8 to 20 kilowatt generator, costs several thousand dollars, and it gives you, there's problems with fuel. In urban areas, you just can't store enough fuel to run it for very long. So it kind of limits you to a smaller generator and a smaller fuel supply just by where you live. There's a couple of ways around that we'll get into, and it's not a problem out in the country, but they're still pretty pricey for a bigger generator. Then we've got the medium-sized generators that are 3 to 8 kilowatt generators, and I like those. It's like the one here on the right, but they aren't easy for smaller people or older people, or if you've got to move and stick it into a vehicle that's got limited space. Also, one big drawback of the whole house generators and the medium-sized generators is that there just aren't as many times when you can use them before a disaster. It's not something that you can stick in the trunk of a car or in a minivan or an SUV and use on a weekend, because it's just not that portable. Some people do go ahead and use them, but they're fairly loud. They go through gas at a pretty good rate, and they're really kind of overkill for camping. And there's another class, and it's obviously by the bias that I'm putting into this presentation, is the way that we've decided to go. And it's a class of 2 kilowatt generators, and they weigh roughly 50 pounds. They sip gas, and they cost under $1,000. Now, if you are a little fuzzy on what the kilowatts are, basically all of your appliances are going to use a certain amount of power, and they're going to be rated in kilowatts. And I'll give you an example. A refrigerator, it really depends on the efficiency. They run from 200 to 300 watts up to 1,000, 2,000 watts, depending on whether they're frost-free, the most efficient LGs on the market, or an older refrigerator. And so you could run a few of those on a 2 kilowatt generator. But you know, basically what you're going to need to do is figure out what all appliances or items you want to run at a given time and size your generator accordingly. You're probably not going to be able to run your air conditioner on a 2 kilowatt generator. I'll show you how to do that in just a minute. But this is going to be mostly for smaller things, for charging batteries, for refrigeration, for maybe running a fan. But the big thing is going to be for charging batteries and then running things off of batteries. What I recommend and what we have gone with is the Yamaha EF2000IS inverter generator. And as you can see, it's got a handle on the top. And the reason it's got a handle on the top is because it's light enough to carry with one hand. And that makes it pretty darn great. It's just a very, very good little generator. And we've had good success with it. And I'll get into some details on it. Once you start looking at generators, if you do any research online, you're going to see that there's the big argument is red versus blue, and red being Honda and blue being Yamaha. And it's this is a debate that will go on as long as Yamaha and Honda are in existence. Yamaha is normally more expensive than Honda. That may change over time, but right now Yamaha is more expensive than Honda. I believe that it's a higher quality product, but it may or may not be. People have had great experiences with Honda. People have had great experiences with Yamaha. My line of thinking is I'm going to be using it some, but when I really, really need it, I don't want to screw around. I want to make sure that I've got a generator that works, and I don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish and end up with a cheap generator that doesn't work in an emergency. Like I said, they're both high quality. The Yamaha comes with more goodies. It's got wrenches, a spark plug wrench. It's also got a charging cable so that you can directly charge 12 volt batteries, which is quite handy. Both can be run parallel and double the output. And what that means is you can take two of the Yamaha 2000s or two of the Honda 2000s and with a special cable hook them together, and then have it's actually 3,800 watts of power, and with that you can run an air conditioner. So you have the flexibility of having small portable generators and enough power to handle some bigger stuff. In reality though, you, in an emergency situation, it just doesn't make sense to run your air conditioner very much at all. If you do decide to go that route, you're better off finding a small window unit that somebody has discarded and run that instead of a whole house air conditioner. Like I said, when you use the parallel cord, you get redundancy, which is awesome. Instead of having one 4,000 watt generator to go bad, you've got two 2,000 watt generators. And if one goes bad, you've got the other. If you need parts from one, you can salvage them off of the other. And it you have twice as many things that can go wrong, but you also, if something does go wrong, you've got a complete generator backup. Makes it easier to carry by having two smaller generators. And you can spread them out. You can have, if you're traveling in two cars, you can put one in each car. If you've got two places, you can put one in each house. If you and your neighbor are preparing together, each of you can buy one and hook them together when need be. And the other thing is you control the fuel use. This is a big, big deal. Since the smaller generators, like I said, just sip fuel, and the big ones go through a decent amount, you control how fast you go through fuel. When you have small fuel requirements, you only need to use one generator. When you have big fuel requirements, you can use two generators. And a third option, this is a newcomer to the market, but so far everything that I've seen has been good about the Champions. I shouldn't say everything. Most everything has been good about the Champions. A few cool things. They are stackable. They're significantly less expensive, almost half as expensive as the Yamahas and less expensive than the Hondas. You can run them in parallel like you can with the Yamahas and the Hondas. One of the biggest problems is that there is a limited network or no dealer network, which means no parts are available for it. With Yamaha and Honda, in almost any city or town, not necessarily town, but any moderate-sized city to large city in the U.S., there's places where you can get parts for the Yamahas and the Hondas. Now, here's another reason that I suggest going with either the red or the blue or the Honda or the Yamaha, and that is tri-fuel adapters. These things are really, really slick. What they do is they allow you to run either propane, natural gas, or regular gasoline in your generator. And that gives you just tremendous flexibility. And it gets around the problem of not being able to store gasoline in urban houses. There's a few other advantages. One is that the exhaust smells better. That's just a function of natural gas and propane as compared to gasoline. Another thing is it significantly increases the longevity of the generator. It can't gum up the carburetor. And it's just, these things are great. And you can, in addition to being able to safely and legally store more fuel for your generator, you don't have to pour hot fuel or don't have to pour fuel into a hot generator. That's one problem that when these go empty, when your tank goes empty, you take off the lid and pour fuel into a generator and it may spill down and hit hot parts of the exhaust. Now on the Honda, there's a lid with a hose in it that allows you to take fuel from another container. I've seen aftermarket versions of this for the Yamaha as well. I haven't tested them though, so I don't know if they actually work. But with this conversion kit, you can store a lot of propane, and the propane doesn't go bad. And it's safer and easier, and you don't have that problem with pouring fuel into a hot generator? Two places where you can get them. I've got them listed here, propane-generators.com and generatorsales.com. When you're using a generator, you got to remember carbon monoxide. And I don't want to sound like a broken record on this, but the fact is there's 400 deaths and 20,000 hospitalizations a year due to carbon monoxide poisoning. And a huge, huge percentage of these happen after natural disasters when the electricity goes out. Unfortunately, there's another component to this. 75% of the youths who are hospitalized after a disaster due to carbon monoxide poisoning, the reason that they had the generator plugged in is because they were playing a game console. And what this comes from is, this statistic is a hospital in Houston after a hurricane. I forget which one it was. But 75% of the kids that were admitted, who were under 18, the reason the generator was going was because they were playing video games. And the reason that they got carbon monoxide poisoning was because they tried using the generator in a garage that was attached to the house, and the carbon monoxide seeped in. And they didn't have a carbon monoxide detector, so they got carbon monoxide poisoning. Carbon monoxide will kill you before it kills the generator. I hate to admit this, but I used to think that if I was using a generator or running a car in a garage, that it would turn off, the engine would run out of air before I did. And the fact is, the brain works different than an engine. The engine can run way after carbon monoxide levels get to lethal levels. So you just need to be really careful with it. And what I suggest is using a plug-in carbon monoxide detector plugged into the generator and a second AA carbon monoxide detector in your house or where you are. And that's even if you've got the generator running outside and you're running a cord into the house. And again, just the reason is it's a cost-benefit analysis here. The cost of being wrong way, way, way outweighs, there is no benefit to being right. Being right is you go on as normal. There's no benefit to being right. Now, a quick primer on solar. Like I said, I love solar, and we've been using it for a long time to one extent or another. But there are four basic types of solar panels, and two that I really want to cover are monocrystalline and polycrystalline. And I've got pictures of the two of those off to the right. Monocrystalline is what's on the top, and as you can see, it's uniform and consistent. Polycrystalline down on the bottom looks irregular and has almost a snowflake pattern. And the reason for this is the monocrystalline ones, everything lines up the same way and it reflects light the same way. The polycrystalline one is basically scrap monocrystalline cells that are put together to make a polycrystalline cell. And the monocrystalline cell will put out more electricity in a smaller space and a smaller panel, but it'll be more expensive. Normally, the cheaper panels that you see are going to be polycrystalline of one design or another. You've also got amorphous and thin film cells, and those are the flexible solar panels that you see. And those, again, actually, they become more expensive per watt, but they're flexible and much, much larger for the same output. So it's a cost benefit of whether you want to go with the cheapest solution to have a panel or the cheapest solution per watt. The cheapest solution per watt is normally the monocrystalline. If you need a compact package, the cheapest solution per watt, if you've got lots of space, is going to be the polycrystalline. If you need flexibility and you need it to fit in a backpack, you're going to want to go with amorphous. On this note, there's 60-watt solar generators that are being sold by several manufacturers, and they're sold paired up with what's called a modified sine wave inverter. And these just, they do technically work, but if you've got a, let's just go nuts and say you've got the high-end LG refrigerator that uses 300 watts of power, and you've got a 60-watt solar panel. What that means is that you're going to need to run your, and this is a gross simplification, but you're going to need to run your, or you're going to need to collect 5 hours of full sun in order to run your refrigerator a single hour. Now, if you've got a more traditional 1200 watt frostless refrigerator, what that means is you're going to have to get 20 hours of sunlight for each hour that you run your refrigerator. So you may actually be able to run it if, when the electricity first goes out and you plug it into the backup power bank or the backup battery bank. But once that battery bank goes down, you're not going to be able to charge it fast enough. You're not going to be able to add electricity to it as fast as you're taking it out. So they are good systems, as long as you know their limitations. And in addition, the most of these, especially the, well not especially, but most notably, the Duracell backup kits and the Xantrex backup kits, they have what's called a modified sine wave inverter, and electronics run on a pure sine wave. And modified sine waves can cause them to burn out faster, or not work as well, or not turn on at all. So if you like your electronics and you like them to last, you may want to make sure that you're using a pure sine wave inverter and not a modified sine wave inverter. Now, personally, we're slowly moving to solar electricity, and it's not cheap, it's not easy, and it's not fast, but we, I like it so much that it's the way that we're moving, and it's going to be a combination of solar and wind. But as long as we're in a town, we aren't going to do wind. It's just going to be solar. Now, I told you I would tell you a trick for how to turn beans into electricity. And this is a very, very simple trick. And you may have heard it before. You may not have. You may not have known how to implement it, even if you did know. And basically what you do is you trade food for time pedaling a human-powered generator, either a hand crank or a foot pedal crank generator. And basically someone comes to the door and says that they want, they're asking for food. You can say, absolutely. All you have to do is pedal this crank, generate so many watts, and I'll give you so much food. You can eat to your heart's content as long as you pedal. And here's an example. Yeah, I want to back up a second. Some people would call that cruel. Some people would call that completely free enterprise. It's an idea that you can take or leave. But after a disaster, you've got charity and you've got people who need to pull their weight. And if people can't pull their weight, that's where charity comes in. If people can pull their weight, I think that they should. So that's just my opinion on it. If you've got a different one, that's fine. What I've got pictured here off to the right is actually the Duracell kit, one of them that I was talking about having the modified sine wave power that comes out of it. This is a 300-watt bicycle generator from pedalpowergenerator.com, and they give you complete plans of how to make a generator yourself using whatever components you want, or you can buy the whole pre-made kit from them. This is great because once you've got the generator, you can hook a bicycle up to it, you can hook a hydro unit up to it if you happen to live near a stream, you can hook a hand crank up to it, you can hook a treadmill up to it, you can hook anything that you want up to it. Next, we're going to talk about adding flexibility with batteries. One of the things that that we do, or that's in our plan when we're going through a day or two or three or however long without power, is we use our generator during the day when it's loud outside to run appliances that we need to run and also to charge batteries. And at night, when it gets quiet out and we want to sleep, we turn off the generator, we bring it inside, and we use our batteries. And that way we have silent operation, we still have electricity, but we don't have a real loud signature that says, hey, we've got a generator, come steal our generator or come look for us for things that you may want. Now, without batteries, you either use power or you lose it. You, if you've got a solar array that's putting out 1,000 watts and you're only using 300 of it, you lose the other 700. If you have batteries in your setup, then you can capture that electricity and you can capture that power and use it when the sun's not out. There's several different kinds of batteries. There's lithium polymer, which is like what's in an iPhone and some smartphones that have very, very small batteries. It's also in airsoft equipment if you use airsoft for firearms training. There's also lithium ion batteries that are also in cell phones, and AGM, which is it's going to look like a regular car battery, but it's got some different component or different features so that it doesn't spill if it gets broken, and it's got some good longevity properties. These are great, great choices, but they're very expensive, and they may keep you from doing something as quickly as you'd like to. Personally, we wanted to get stuff in place, and specifically, we wanted to get stuff in place before a particular blizzard. And so we went with T105 type 6-volt batteries. And over the years, we've gotten a few different kinds. We've gotten batteries by Interstate, by DECA, and by Alliance. And they're all the same T105 type, which are about the same size as a car battery, but they're 6-volt batteries that are made to run appliances rather than start cars. And this is an important point. You've got car batteries and you've got deep cycle batteries. And car batteries are made to put off a large amount of power to start the car and then get immediately charged back up. Deep cycle batteries are made to get drained down halfway, 60%, 70% of their capacity, and then charged back up over and over and over again. If you use a car battery in a deep cycle application, your car battery will die very quickly, within days or weeks. If you use a deep cell or a deep cycle battery in an automotive application, as long as you've got enough amps, it'll work fine. It's normally not going to work because it's going to take several batteries to generate the amperage that you need to start a car. So now, all this to say, if you've got an extra car battery lying around, that's not what you want to use for powering appliances. And the batteries that we've gotten are all 200 amp hour batteries, and they cost between $100 and $150 a piece. And you can find them at local stores, local battery places, and local golf cart supply places. A lot of times these are called golf cart batteries because that's where they're used most often. They're also used in RVs, and those are really the two main things. They aren't used in household applications that much. There's a different class of batteries that are used for permanent residential use. Charging the batteries becomes the next issue. And the reason for this is they've got to be maintained whether you use them or not. And this is especially true if you're in a hot climate. Once you get over 75 degrees, the life of the battery drops off significantly. So you really want to maintain them and make sure that they keep a good charge and keep the fluid levels up, and so that when you do need them and when you do need to rely on them, they're going to be available for you. Personally, I charge and check water levels in our batteries once a month. One thing that I didn't say on the having the three types of batteries. You never want to mix batteries from different brands or that have been bought at different times. It ends up basically killing them. The batteries either have to be the same or you don't use them together. And what we had was pairs of batteries that we would cycle through between using and charging. It is admittedly not the most efficient way to do it, but when we were tiptoeing into solar, it was, or not just solar, but backup power, it was the way that we could afford to do it and the way that we could make it happen. So it's what we did. At some point in the future, we'll go ahead and buy a big bank of batteries, 6, 8, 10, 12 batteries at one time. That just wasn't in the cards when we started buying batteries. For charging the batteries, if the battery levels are low, we use a combination 6 and 12 volt Schumacher plug-in charger. And this is, again, admittedly not the best choice for charging deep cycle batteries, but it does work. We really need to upgrade to a dedicated charger and maintainer. They're not incredibly expensive. Just when we did it, we went with one that we could use both for charging our 6-volt batteries once a month and for charging and jump-starting vehicles if we needed to. One big benefit of the Yamaha inverter generators is that they charge batteries directly. And there's a cord that comes with them with jumper cables, and you just stick it on the battery and let the generator go and charge it up. And you do need to keep track of the voltage, but it will charge it in good time. Controllers are another option, and they're what you use when you're using solar, wind, or human power and that's generating a DC current, and you use that to charge batteries. That gets into a whole nother thing. The pedal power generator site has a very, very good controller on it that will take a wide range of voltages and charge 6 and 12 volt batteries. Actually, either 6 volt batteries in series or, don't know why that popped up, 6 volt batteries in series or 12 volt batteries. Next is inverters. Inverters are really, really awesome. And it's important to know a couple of things about the inverters. This one here on the right is a relatively cheap one that you can get at Radio Shack. And it has both a cigarette adapter and alligator clips to connect directly to a battery or a battery bank. One thing that you need to keep in mind with these is that they're most efficient when they're running at 60 to 70% of the rated capacity. So if you get a 300 watt inverter, you really want to be running it somewhere between 180 and 210 watts. If you use it more than that, if you're using a higher load than that, it's going to drain your battery faster. If you use less than that, it's just not going to be efficient because it takes a certain amount of power to run the inverter, whether you've got anything plugged into it or not. And because of that, you really don't want to use it if you're using less than half of the recommended load. You can for a short time, especially if you're in your car and you're driving and it's getting powered by the alternator. But if you're running it off of a battery, you kind of want to figure out another solution than running off of the inverter. Again, the pure sine wave inverters are very good. The modified sine wave inverters, you may or may not have trouble with them. Most inverters are modified sine wave. This one right here, the Intercell one, we have two of these. They have a modified sine wave inverter in them. We use them for computers. We use them for our phones, charging our phones. And we have had trouble with them. They've also worked great. And it's just hit or miss. And this is something that you want to figure out before you've got a problem and get a pure sine wave inverter if they don't work for your particular appliances. As far as the efficiency that you want to look for, none of them are 100% efficient. They all waste power. They waste power in the form of heat, and they waste power with the fan that they all have to dissipate heat. 80 to 90% is what you'll normally find in stores, and 90 to 98% efficient is easy to find. They're, in fact, a lot of solar rebate programs are based on having an inverter that's 90 to 98% efficient. If you don't have one that's 90 to 98% efficient, you won't get a rebate. So it, you can look for them or not. It's definitely not a deal killer to get an 80 to 90% efficient inverter if it's what you can get and put into place right now. There's, again, there's good enough and there's perfect. And if you can do perfect, that's awesome. If you can do good enough, do it. And that way, if a disaster happens, you've got a workable plan in place. It may not be perfect, but it's better than having it all floating around in your head and saying, I wish I would have. Something else to keep in mind is running load versus peak load. Most inverters have two ratings on them, and they advertise their peak load. And that's going to be, in this case, the 300 watt. Or, I'm sorry, this one's a 350 watt. This is an interesting point. There's two different models of this, and they used to be 350 watts, and they replaced them with a 300 watt version at the same price. And this is just a subtle form of inflation. But so I'll go back to the 300 watt example. The most power that it can handle at one time is 300 watts. And if you're starting an appliance, it takes more power to start it than it does to run it. So the running load is what it can handle for minutes or hours at a time. And the peak load is what it can handle for a few seconds while an appliance is starting up. So again, you want to size your inverter for what you're running. Garage door opener is an example of this. When, going back to blizzards again, when my lovely petite wife was driving around with a newborn and a toddler, I didn't really care that she could open the door if she needed to in a power outage. I didn't want her to. I didn't want her to have to. If she needed to, that was fine. She could do it. Part of being a loving, doting husband was I wanted to make it so she wouldn't have to, even if the electricity was out. And so what I did was I hooked up an inverter and a battery bank that was constantly charged to our garage door opener. And that way, when the electricity went out during blizzards or whatever reason they went out, she'd hit her garage door opener and the door would open. A garage door opener takes a lot more than 300 watts, and this inverter did not work for that, and we had to get a bigger inverter that was dedicated to the garage door opener. Which kind of brings up the thing with multiple inverters versus a single inverter. Inverters are something that once you get into backup power, you're probably going to end up with a few different inverters. It's kind of like a knife. There's good general knives, but sometimes you want a specialty knife. We use small inverters for small handheld devices, keeping phones charged, radios charged, etc. while we're driving. We use big inverters to run appliances. We run the blower on our air conditioner with a battery bank. I'm sorry, not on our air conditioner, but on our furnace. Because one of the things that happens in a power outage in the winter is you may have gas to your house, but unless you've got power to run your thermostat and your blower, all that gas doesn't do you any good. So we have a backup plan in place to take care of that. Now here's some ways to use less power. Again, I talked about before how you've got two options in the whole emergency power game, and one is to make more power and the other is to use less power. And it's much, much easier to use less power than to find ways to generate more, because fuel isn't always easy to come by. If you're in a high wind area and you can have a windmill, that's great as long as you've got wind. Same thing with sun. As long as it's sunny and you've got a correctly sized system, that's great. If you've got both, it kind of means that you've been able to buy your way out of the problem, which there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not an option that's available for everyone, either because of finances or because of where they're at. So here's some ways to use less power. One is to use candles, lanterns, and LED lights for lighting. And personally, we have candles and lanterns, but they aren't something that we use a whole lot. And fire is the simple reason. We do use them in the kitchen where we've got tile floor. We don't use them in the living room or the bedrooms where we have carpet and fabric. And so this is something that you're gonna have to make a choice on. If you do use candles and lanterns, of course you wanna have make sure and have extra fire extinguishers available to use on them. LED lights, we absolutely love LED lights. After Christmas, we go and I go around to the different stores and I buy up the Christmas tree lights, Christmas tree LED lights, and they might be $1 to $3 for 50-foot string of lights that were $10 to $20 three days before. Great, great way to pick up LED lights on the cheap. Headlamps and lanterns, LED lanterns, are a great, great option and a great alternative to incandescent lighting or a typical bulb. We like using incandescent lighting just because of the quality of the light, but when it comes to power consumption, you just can't beat LEDs. They are significantly more expensive, but the power savings is incredible. In our house, we don't have LED lights in our appliances right now, or in our fixtures. All of our LED lights are headlamps, camping lanterns, other things that have multiple uses. In our RV though, we've changed a lot of the interior lights to LED lights. And what we do is we have one switch set up that's all LED and some of the others set up so that they're incandescent. And so in the kitchen and living room area, we can turn on just the LED lights and be fine, or we can turn on the LED and incandescent if we have a better power supply and have a lot of light. Refrigerators are another thing that use a lot of power. And there's no real way to tell how long your refrigerator is going to last after the power goes out. It's going to depend on how well it's insulated, how full it is. The more full it is, the longer it'll last. I talk about this in the Survive in Place course. One of the things that you want to do is fill up any empty spaces that you can in your refrigerator and your freezer with water bottles or water jugs, so that when the power does go out, you've got that, it's called thermal mass, and it will keep the refrigerator and the freezer cold much, much longer. The other thing is you want to limit access to your refrigerator and your freezer. And if you can help it, you only want to open it once or twice a day. Ideally, you don't want to open it at all. But at some point, you're going to want to get food out of it. So when you do, get it in and out as quickly as possible. One trick on this, if you are in a situation where you have a camera and it works, after a disaster, a digital camera. One of the first times that you open up your refrigerator, take a picture of it. And then from then on, when you get ready to get into the refrigerator, stop a minute and take a look at that picture that you took, and so that you know where you need to reach so that you can minimize your time in the refrigerator as much as possible. Another thing that you can do is if you know that there's a big space in your refrigerator after the power goes out, take a trash bag and blow it up and tie it shut and try and make it so that it's the size of the space. And then when you open the door, stuff the trash bag in. And what that will do is keep the air from transferring when you open the door the next time. Another thing that you can do is consider using a propane refrigerator freezer like what you find in RVs. And if you've got an RV, then and it's parked next to your house, it's pretty simple. You just move stuff from your house out there and start running off of propane. The downside of these is they're pretty pricey when you compare them to a conventional refrigerator. And I'll tell you a trick on how to get them cheaper in just a minute. Also, one of the things you might want to consider is if you're using a generator to power refrigeration, instead consider using a deep freeze and a cooler instead of using a fridge. So basically what you would do is run the deep freeze a few hours a day and freeze water in it, and then take that ice and put it into a cooler, preferably a very high quality cooler like the Yeti coolers I've talked about before. It's Y-E-T-I coolers. And with the Yeti coolers, just a little bit of ice will last for several days. The next thing is cook with the smallest possible appliance that you can. Even if you've got a way to power a full-size gas oven, try and use a smaller camp oven or a Dutch oven. And basically try and figure out how you can use the least amount of fuel as possible. If you have a choice of using your full grill or using a little camp stove, use the camp stove. Even if you have the ability to use debris in your area to burn debris to cook that hasn't been treated or is going to make the food taste nasty or unhealthy, then use that and save your refined fuel for when you absolutely need it. One thing with air conditioners, after a power outage, they're pretty much, you're not going to want them. You're not going to be using them. You can use them, but the amount of fuel that you need to power a generator to run an air conditioner is going to be cost prohibitive. Again, you can use the strategy I talked about, which is finding a high efficiency window unit and running that in one room. But for the most part, you're going to want to figure out other ways to stay cool. And one of those is by adjusting clothing. And in the summer, obviously, you want to wear fewer clothes. In the winter, obviously, you want to wear more clothes. And the goal in a emergency or survival situation is to conserve fuel. And regardless of whether you want to conserve fuel during normal times, during an emergency, everyone needs to conserve. If you don't, it just means you're going to run out faster and you're going to have another problem that you have to deal with. One of the best things that you can do to conserve power in an emergency is to create microenvironments. And a winter example is the easiest one. If it's 0 degrees out and your power is out, instead of heating the entire house, just heat one room. And instead of heating one room, set up a tent in a room, or set up what we call with our boys a fort with couch cushions and blankets and sheets. But try and make as small of an area as possible. And if you make a small area, you can heat it with just your body heat. and natural body functions. If it gets a little bit bigger, then you can use other types of heat. If you are in a what I would call a normal suburban house with a oversized living room and a fireplace and lots of open passageways to other parts of the house, try and close them off with sheets or blankets or tarps or visqueen so that your fireplace can actually heat the room that you're in. Now again, you got a carbon monoxide issue here, and make sure that you're running a carbon monoxide detector. But try and make the area as small as possible. If you do decide to go with a room air conditioner, pick a small room. Pick the smallest room that you can use with the air conditioner, so that you don't have to run it very long and you can get it cool and get some benefit from it. Another thing is solar cookers. They save a tremendous amount of fuel just by harnessing the sun's energy. And here's an example of one that I talk about in the Advanced Urban Water Purification book, and also in the Lamplighter Report newsletter. And what this is a Fresnel lens, and it's a lens salvaged from a projection TV. And what it does is, basically it's a magnifying glass. And if you can imagine a magnifying glass that you cut into slices, and then you hollow out the middle so that all you've got is the edges, and then you compact all the edges together so that instead of the magnifying glass being shaped like a lens, it's flat. And what this does is it focuses the sun's energy, and it focuses it quite well. This it'll start a piece of timber or lumber on fire in 5 to 10 seconds in the focal point of it. And it'll heat up this little black container well over 160 degrees in, I believe it's 10 minutes. So you can pasteurize water, which makes it drinkable, and you pasteurize water by getting it to 158 degrees. And that kills bacteria, viruses, and protozoa. And you can use that for cooking as well. If you let it sit longer, you can boil with it, but you don't even need to do that. Another option is to take an old satellite dish. And this is just I believe it's a Dish Network satellite dish. And what I did was I took some Mylar tape that I got off of Amazon and coated it and pointed it towards the sun. And again, it heats up the container up to 158 degrees to where the water is pasteurized relatively quickly. I believe this one was 15 to 20 minutes, and it was well below 20 degrees when I did this experiment. And here's another option. This is a sun oven or a solar oven from sunoven.com. The downside of this is the last couple were very cheap to implement. The Fresnel lens, you can get those on big trash pickup days when people have TVs out on the curb. Or you can buy them off of Amazon for $100, framed and ready to go. The satellite dishes, you can get those for free off of Craigslist or Freecycle. But these are $300, and they do work very well. As you can see, they're cooking bread in there. But you can make one at home on your own out of cardboard and aluminum foil using the exact same design parameters. And what you want to do is basically collect as much sunlight as you can and focus it on a small cooking area. Another thing that you can do for power is keep just small batteries on hand. We keep at least 50 AA and AAA disposables on hand at any given time. and we just pick them up when they go on sale at Costco. We don't get them at big box, or not at big box, at sporting goods stores anymore, because what we found is the AA batteries that are sold in sporting goods stores normally have a lot less capacity than the normal batteries. And it may look like you're getting a heck of a deal, and in reality, you're not. You're getting about a third of the capacity for maybe half the price. Another option that you've got is nickel metal hydride rechargeables. And these can be good or they can be junk. And you want to make sure that you avoid buying them unless you see a milliamp hour rating on them. Three good brands are Sanyo, and they go by Inloop. Amazon Basic is great, and GP is great. A lot of other ones are hit and miss. Now, especially on these, the Inloop ones, there are Inloops that have 800 milliamp hour capacity, and there are Inloops that have 2,000 milliamp hour capacity. And they're not apples to apples. You buy the 2,000 milliamp hour ones, and you've got 2.5 times more power than with the 800 milliamp hour ones. So you really want to make sure that you look for and find the milliamp hour rating before you buy these nickel metal hydride rechargeables. For disposables, something that we are switching over to with a lot of our electronics is lithium batteries. And all I can say is they are incredible. In GPS units, they last 2 to 3 times longer when the temperature is what I would call normal. In cold weather, they last even longer than that compared to alkalines. They're lighter and they have a 15-year shelf life. They are more expensive per battery, but they aren't more expensive when you consider energy density and how many batteries you need to carry with you to run appliances for the same amount of time. There are lithium rechargeables that you can get, but they cost about $10 a piece, and I just don't see the value in them right now. For some applications, they may work for stuff that you're going to go out today, this week, this weekend, and put into place. I wouldn't worry about lithium rechargeables. Two parting tricks I want to share with you. One is how to get cheap, uninterruptible power supply systems, or UPS systems, otherwise known as battery backups. And I especially look for ones that have automatic voltage regulation. And what automatic voltage regulation does is it smooths out rough electricity. So if you have problems from the utility company, problems on your block, problems with your transformer, etc., the automatic voltage regulation, or AVR, will smooth it out so it doesn't damage electronics and so that your electronics last longer. Well, all these systems, the batteries die at some point. And when they do, it's very, very easy to open them up and replace the batteries. And it's so easy. All you have to do, once you open it up and look at the battery, is type in the model number in Amazon and order the battery. Or go to Radio Shack and buy the battery. And it's just a fraction of the cost of going out and buying a new UPS system. One of the interesting things is these get thrown away very, very often. And you can see them on the curb on big trash days. You can see them on the curb on hazardous material days. And you can see entire battery backup units at battery recharging stations, or battery recharging drop-off locations, where you drop off batteries instead of throwing them away. And there they're free. So you just pick up the system, open it up, take out the batteries, and order new ones. The The new ones and the ones that came with the battery will normally have the same connections. If not, all you do is snip off the ones from that came with the unit and put them onto the new one. Either crimp them on, twist and tape, solder, however you want to connect them. But then you can get a very, very high-end power supply for very low price. Next thing is to, if you've got the space, consider buying a used RV. And the reason is, all of a sudden, you've got water storage, a generator, propane tanks, a combination propane and 120-volt refrigerator, an air conditioner, deep cycle batteries, and a battery charge controller for cheap. I looked right before I recorded this, and in our area right now, there are four RVs that have all of these items in them from $500 to $1,800. So for less than the cost of a refrigerator, or less than the cost of the generator, or less than the cost of the air conditioner, you can get all of them. And granted, I'll be the first to say, RVs take work. And all of these systems in these dirt cheap RVs are probably going to need help. But they may not. If you go out and you look at them, and the reason that they're giving away the RV is because the engine doesn't work, and all you want to do is tow it and take all the stuff out of the inside or use all the stuff from the inside, then you're good to go. For self-propelled RVs, you can have engine problems, you can have transmission problems, you can have all sorts of things that make the RV not worth very much, but all of the things that are valuable from a self-reliant perspective are still good in there. And you can all of a sudden have redundancy with what you've got in your house, again, for next to nothing. So if you've got the space to park it, and if that's something that interests you, I want to encourage you to look at it. Look at the trailers, look at the self-propelled RVs, and if that's a fit for you, it could be a very good fit. We've gone this route, and so we have a backup to everything in our house, everything that we've done. It happens to be a trailer that we can take wherever we want to go. We can also leave it by the house and have backups for all the systems that are in our house. So that's it for this module, and look forward to seeing you on the next one.